somebody asked me to talk about this one, although I have talked about this one before. The reason I like this particular sutta and have chosen it myself before, for two reasons. First of all, it gives you a very good description of the person who is the anagami, the non-returner. People have all sorts of ideas about enlightened beings and what they can and what they can't do. But this gives a description of the character of a person who is at the next stage of enlightenment to being a fully enlightened, the stage of anagami or non-returner. But it also makes a very, very strong case here about the nature of the Buddha, our Buddha. Because according to this particular sutta, it was about an occasion a long, long time ago, not even the time of Gautama the Buddha. So this is much longer than 2,500 years ago. Because this was the Buddha talking to Ananda about a previous life of his. And what's most interesting here is actually what happened to him in his previous life. And it does mean something very controversial to strict Buddhists. In many countries, I know Thailand, Burma, Sri Lanka, they have a group of what you might call just post-canonical texts, which are just added on to the Jataka tales, which tells of 10 last life stories of the Buddha and how he came to become a Buddha. And the last of those 10 stories was called the story when he was born as Prince Vaisantara. And as Prince Vaisantara, he perfected the spiritual quality of generosity, which was supposed to be the last of the spiritual qualities necessary for him to become a Buddha. So he was building up his spiritual resources. However, that was post-canonical, and there's no mention of any Prince Vaisantara in the early teachings of the Buddha. And indeed, this particular sutta here in Gatikara seems to completely contradict the idea that the Buddha's last life before he became Gautama the Buddha was as Prince Vaisantara. So here we are going against received tradition in many Buddhist countries. And indeed, when I've mentioned this sutta, people have actually sent letters and emails and say that can't be right because the previous life of the Buddha was as Prince Vaisantara, because that's the tradition which has been carried out over many centuries. But it seems that there is a good case for saying that's wrong. And it also has some other very interesting implications. If we look at this particular sutta, which is an early sutta, it seems to be valid, and we look at its consequences here, it does bolster the supposition that the Buddha, our Buddha Gautama, that when he sat under the Bodhi tree, he wasn't, as it were, self-enlightened. It wasn't if he figured it out all by himself, but that he recalled this previous life, and this previous life which was lived under a Buddha, so that that's where he found out the Four Noble Truths. And it also implies that the Buddha may have, our Buddha may have been a once returner when he came into this last life. The idea of the Buddha being a once returner when he was born in this life in Lumbini, again, is very controversial. It is mentioned in the book called Katawatu, the Points of Controversy, which was written in the time of the Emperor Asoka, and is now part of what's called the Abhidhamma. That Points of Controversy there, that particular book was certainly written in the time of Asoka. There's no way, very clear, it could have been written in the time of the Buddha. And there it says that a particular group, the Sarvastivadins, also said that the Buddha was a once-returner when he was born in his last life. However, the Theravada say, no, that is wrong. But I say that maybe the Sarvastivadins had it right. So this is a particular sutta which actually gives rise to some controversy. And that's one of the reasons why I like it. It's interesting. And for those of you who have the sheet, you'll notice there's an extra little sutta which is posted on the back. It's only a very small sutta. It's the Gatikara sutta from the Devata Sangyutta. But I will read it out. It's such a small sutta. You don't really need to have your own copies. But if you did really want to have them, I brought out the Sangyutta Nikaya here. Okay, so that's enough of an introduction. Now we can actually begin. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. So this is the 81st sutta in the Majjhima Nikaya, the Gatikara Sutta. And Gatikara literally means a potter, one who makes pots. Thus have I heard on one occasion a Blessed One was wandering among the Kosalans, which is in the north of India. That's by the time the Jeta Grove Monastery was close to the capital of Kosala, at Sarvati. So he's wandering amongst that area, together with a large sangha of bhikkhus, of monks. Then, in a certain place beside the main road, the Blessed One smiled. It occurred to the Venerable Ananda, what is the reason, what is the cause for the Blessed One's smile? Tathagatas, Buddhas, do not smile for no reason. So he arranged his upper robe on one shoulder, like we do here, and extending his hands in reverential salutation towards the Blessed One, asked him, Venerable Sir, what is the reason, what is the cause for the Blessed One's smile? Tathagatas, Buddhas, do not smile for no reason. This is actually why we wear just one shoulder bare. It's always out of respect when we're in the temple, because there's a Buddha statue around. And the Buddha replies, once, Ananda, in this place where he was sitting, there was a prosperous and busy market town called Webalinga, with many inhabitants and crowded with people. Very often the Buddha was saying that towns come and towns go, and because of his memory of previous lives, he could sometimes know that that particular place was once a thriving town. For those of you who have been on pilgrimage to the holy sites in India, you know that where the Chaitanya Monastery is, the Chaitanya Grove Monastery, you can see some of the excavations of the town of Sarvati, one of the biggest towns in India at that time. There's nothing there now, just plains. And also those of you who go to Rajagaha, especially up on the Vulture's Peak, you see where the old town once used to be. You still have the city walls there and a few other little excavations, but there's hardly anything left at all. A completely abandoned town, which was once one of the biggest towns and cities in the whole of India. Nothing left. This actually shows just how time makes cities disappear, and new cities come somewhere else. So, there was once a busy market town called Webalinga. Now, the Blessed One Kassapa, accomplished and fully enlightened, lived near the market town Webalinga. It was here, in fact, that the Blessed One Kassapa, accomplished and fully enlightened, had his monastery. It was here, in fact, that the Blessed One Kassapa, accomplished and fully enlightened, resided and advised the Sangha of bhikkhus. And Kassapa was supposed to be the previous Buddha, before Gautama. Gautama the Buddha, our Buddha, we call it our Buddha if you like, because it's the Buddha of our time, never said that he was the only Buddha in history, but there were other Buddhas going way, way back, even Buddhas of previous eons, understanding that the Buddha was not sort of a special being, but like a person, an ordinary person, who because of their enlightenment deserves that particular title. And when that Buddha passes away, after many, many thousands of years, another Buddha comes to take his place. And many of you know that Kassapa was the previous Buddha, our Buddha is Gautama Buddha, or Sakyamuni sometimes, the sage of the Sakyans, and the future Buddha is supposed to be Maitreya. But that would only happen when Buddhism completely disappears. So that is not going to disappear in the next 100 years in your lifetime. So all of those people who are waiting for Maitreya Buddha, you've got a long wait. It's much better to actually to practice now and not put off your enlightenment until Maitreya Buddha. Because that's like having a sickness and not going to see the doctors who are very competent and waiting to some other special doctor who might come sometime later on. For any of you who know Samuel Beckett's play of Waiting for Godot, Waiting for Maitreya is so similar. In other words, it's a bit foolish. Not a bit foolish, very foolish. So, the Blessed One Kassapa would actually lived and had his monastery in that place a long time ago. Then the Venerable Ananda followed. Then the Venerable Ananda folded his patchwork cloak in four. That's the robe which you sometimes see us wearing over our shoulders during ceremonies these days. He folded his patchwork cloak in four and, spreading it out, said to the Blessed One, "Then, Venerable Sir, let the Blessed One be seated. Thus this place will have been used by two accomplished ones, fully enlightened ones." The Blessed One sat down on the seat that had been made ready and addressed the Venerable Ananda thus. So Ananda was telling, so the Buddha was going to tell a story of what happened in this place a long time ago. So here we go, the story of Kassapa the Buddha. "Once, Ananda, in this place there was a prosperous and busy market town called Webalinga, with many inhabitants and crowded with people. Now the Blessed One, Kassapa, the Buddha Kassapa, accomplished and fully enlightened, lived near the market town, Webalinga. It was here, in fact, that the Blessed One, Kassapa, accomplished and fully enlightened, had his monastery. It was here, in fact, that the Blessed One Kassapa, accomplished and fully enlightened, resided and advised the Sangha of Bhikkhus. In Webalinga, the Blessed One Kassapa, accomplished and fully enlightened, had a supporter as his chief supporter, a potter named Gatikara. Gatikara the potter had, as a friend, as his close friend, a Brahmin student named Jyotipala. One day, the potter Gatikara addressed the Brahmin student Jyotipala thus, "My dear Jyotipala, let us go and see the Blessed One Kassapa, accomplished and fully enlightened. I hold that it is good to see the Blessed One, accomplished and fully enlightened." The Brahmin student Jyotipala replied, "Enough, my dear Gatikara. What is the use of seeing that bald-pated recluse?" The translation doesn't totally bring out the fact that he was actually being quite rude to Kassapa the Buddha. A bald-pated recluse, you might as well say that sort of bald-headed no-hoper or loser or something. But it was obviously, if you know your Pali, a term of denigration, of abuse. A second and third time, the potter Gatikara said, "My dear Jyotipala, let us go and see the Blessed One Kassapa, accomplished and fully enlightened. I hold that it is good to see that Blessed One, accomplished and fully enlightened." And a second and a third time, the Brahmin student Jyotipala replied, "Enough, my dear Gatikara. What is the use of seeing that bald-pated recluse? Then, my dear Jyotipala, let us take a loofah and bath powder and go to the river to bathe." "Very well," Jyotipala replied, because Brahmins like to bathe. So the potter Gatikara and the Brahmin student Jyotipala took a loofah and bath powder and went to the river to bathe. Then Gatikara said to Jyotipala, "My dear Jyotipala, there is the monastery of the Blessed One Kassapa, accomplished and fully enlightened, quite nearby. Let us go and see the Blessed One Kassapa, accomplished and fully enlightened. I hold that it is good to see the Blessed One, accomplished and fully enlightened." Jyotipala replied, "Enough, my dear Gatikara. What is the use of seeing that bald-plated recluse?" A second and a third time. Things are always done three times in Buddhism. Gatikara said, "My dear Jyotipala, there is a monastery of the Blessed One Kassapa nearby. Let us go and see the Blessed One, Kassapa, accomplished and fully enlightened. I hold that it is good to see the Blessed One accomplished and fully enlightened. And Jyotipala replied again, enough, my dear Gatikara. What's the use of seeing that bald-pated recluse? So you see, so far, Jyotipala was a friend of Gatikara. Gatikara was a great disciple of the Buddha Kassapa, and obviously wanted his friend to come and see the Buddha, but he kept on refusing. And for those of you who have a partner or a friend, you say, come to Dhammaloka Center, come and listen to the Dhamma. Very often people say to you, what's the use of seeing those bald-headed monks and nuns? What good is it? So you can understand what's coming along here. Then the potter Gatikara seized the Brahmin student Jyotipala by the belt and said, my dear Jyotipala, there is the monastery of the Blessed One Kassapa, accomplished and fully in line, quite nearby. Let us go and see the Blessed One Kassapa, accomplished and fully in line. I hold that it is good to see the Blessed One accomplished and fully enlightened. So by grabbing him by the belt, he was actually being really forceful. Then the Brahmin student Jyotipala undid his belt and said, enough, my dear Gatikara. What is the use of seeing that bald-pated recluse? Then when the Brahmin student Jyotipala had washed his head, the potter Gatikara seized him by the hair and said, my dear Jyotipala, there is the monastery of the Blessed One Kassapa, accomplished and fully enlightened, quite nearby. Let us go and see the Blessed One Kassapa, accomplished and fully enlightened. I hold that it is good to see that Blessed One accomplished and fully enlightened. So he's actually dragging him by the hair. Now he could undo his belt, but he couldn't undo his hair. Then the Brahmin student Jyotipala thought, it is wonderful, it is marvelous, that this potter Gatikara, who is of an inferior birth, when it says a different birth there, it's actually the Pali means an inferior caste. Because like Jyotipala was a Brahmin, Gatikara was a simple worker, a potter. It is, even though they were friends, there was a lot of hierarchy with castes. So it's amazing that this potter Gatikara, who's of a different caste, should presume to seize me by the hair when we have just washed our heads. Surely this can be no simple matter. And so he said to his friend, the potter Gatikara, you go as far as this, my dear Gatikara. I go as far as this, my dear Jyotipala, for so much do I hold that it is good to see the Buddha, the Blessed One, accomplished and fully enlightened. Then, my dear Gatikara, let go of me. Let's visit him. So Gatikara just went to the extremes of what was allowable socially, using his power of friendship to show that Jyotipala, who didn't want to have anything to do with the Buddha Kassapa, just called him a bald-headed loser, to go and see Kassapa. So Gatikara the potter and Jyotipala the Brahmin student went to the Blessed One, Kassapa, accomplished and fully enlightened. Gatikara, after paying homage to the Buddha, sat down at one side, while Jyotipala, not being a disciple, exchanged greetings with him, and when his courteous and amiable talk was finished, he too sat down at one side. Gatikara then said to the Blessed One, Kassapa, accomplished and fully enlightened, venerable sir, this is the Brahmin student Jyotipala, my friend, my close friend. Let the Blessed One teach him the Dhamma. So the Buddha, or the Blessed One Kassapa, accomplished and fully enlightened, instructed, urged, roused and encouraged Gatikara the potter and Jyotipala the Brahmin student with an exposition of the Dhamma. At the conclusion of the exposition, having delighted and rejoiced in the Blessed One Kassapa's words, they rose from their seats, and after paying homage to the Blessed One Kassapa, accomplished and fully enlightened, keeping him on their right, they departed. By keeping the teacher, or in this case the Buddha, on your right, that was a sign of respect, which is why next week, when we do the circumambulation, we always keep the objects of veneration on our right. So we circumambulate in a clockwise direction. That's actually where that comes from, keeping the object of worship to your right. Then Jyotipala, after they'd just left the Buddha's presence, this is, remember, Kassapa the Buddha, not Gautama the Buddha, then Jyotipala asked Gatikara, "Now that you have heard this Dhamma, my dear Gatikara, why don't you go forth from the home life into homelessness?" And Jyotipala, and he continued, "My dear Jyotipala," Then Jyotipala asked Gatikara, "Now that you have heard this Dhamma, my dear Gatikara, why don't you go forth from home life into homelessness?" And Gatikara replied, "My dear Jyotipala, don't you know that I support my blind and aged parents?" That's the only reason why he wouldn't go forth, because Gatikara was the only person, the only child of two parents who were both blind. He had to support them. And Jyotipala replied, "Then, my dear Gatikara, I shall go forth from the home life into homelessness." So obviously Jyotipala was very inspired with what he heard and saw in the presence of the Buddha. So Gatikara the potter and Jyotipala the Brahmin student went again to the Blessed One Kassapa, accomplished and fully enlightened. After paying homage to him, they sat down at one side, and Gatikara the potter said to the Blessed One, Kassapa, accomplished and fully enlightened, "Venerable Sir, this is the Brahmin student Jyotipala, my friend, my close friend. Let the Blessed One give him the going forth." And the Brahmin student Jyotipala received the going forth from the Blessed One Kassapa, accomplished and fully enlightened, and he received later on the full admission. The going forth is what we call like the novice ordination. The full admission is the full bhikkhu ordination. Then, not long after Jyotipala, the Brahmin student, had received a full admission, a half month after he had received a full admission, the Blessed One Kassapa, accomplished and fully enlightened, having stayed at Webalinga as long as he chose, set out to wander towards Benares. Wandering by stages, he eventually arrived at Benares, and there he went to live in a deer park at Isipatana. Now from this, we leave Jyotipala, but he's going to come into his own at the very end of this discourse. So don't forget Jyotipala. We're now going to be focusing on Gatikara. Any comments so far? Yes? This is an interesting thing. You've read ahead. Remember, well, for those of you who want to read ahead and see how this ends up, it says at the very end quite clearly, and I've got another sutta to back it up, that Jyotipala soon was to become Gautama the Buddha. So this is a previous life of our Buddha. It's a very good thing for you to see this. Let's look at the last page, page 676. Let's just rush ahead. Page 676, the very end of this sutta, paragraph 23. "Now, Ananda, you may think thus. Certainly someone else was the Brahmin student Jyotipala on that occasion, but it should not be regarded thus. I was that Brahmin student Jyotipala on that occasion." That is what the Buddha said. The Venerable Ananda was satisfied and delighted in the Blessed One's words. So this is our Buddha when he met the previous Buddha, and as you say, bad-mouthed him, would not even go near him until he had his hair pulled, literally dragged into the presence of a Buddha. But of course, when he actually went in front of a Buddha and heard the teachings, he actually became a monk under Kassapa the Buddha. Keep that in mind. Now we're just going on to the life of Gatikara. So we go back to paragraph 14. "Now, King Kiki of Kasi heard, 'It seems that the Blessed One Kassapa, accomplished and fully enlightened, has reached Benares and is living in the deer park at Isipatana.'" Kasi was the kingdom of which Benares was the capital in ancient days. So the King Kiki of Parsi had a number of state carriages made ready, and mounting a state carriage drove out from Benares with the full pomp of royalty in order to see the Blessed One Kassapa, accomplished and fully enlightened. He went thus as far as the road was passable for carriages, and then he got down from his carriage and went forward on foot to the Blessed One Kassapa, accomplished and fully enlightened. After paying homage to him, he sat down at one side, and the Blessed One Kassapa, accomplished and fully enlightened, instructed, urged, roused, and encouraged King Kiki of Parsi with an exposition of the Dhamma. At the conclusion of the exposition, King Kiki of Parsi said, "Venerable Sir, let the Blessed One, together with the Sangha of Bhikkhus, consent to accept tomorrow's meal from me." And the Blessed One Kassapa, accomplished and fully enlightened, accepted in silence. Those days that when you made an invitation, if the people were silent, then that was an assent. These days, if I'm silent, it means I haven't heard you, so please repeat it. So usually we say yes or no these days. So silence is no cause to assume consent these days. Then, knowing that the Blessed One Kassapa, accomplished and fully enlightened, had accepted, the king rose from his seat, and after paying homage to the Buddha, keeping him on his right side, he departed. Then when the night had ended, King Kiki of Parsi had good food of various kinds prepared in his own dwellings. Red rice stored in a sheaf with dark grains picked out, along with many sauces and curries. And he had the time announced to the Blessed One Kassapa, accomplished and fully enlightened, thus, "It is time, Venerable Sir, the meal is ready." Then, it being morning, the Blessed One Kassapa, accomplished and fully enlightened, dressed and taking his bowl and outer robe, he went with the Sangha of Bhikkhus to the dwelling of King Kiki of Parsi and sat down on the seat made ready. Then, with his own hands, King Kiki of Parsi served and satisfied the Sangha of Bhikkhus, headed by the Buddha, with the various kinds of good food. When the Blessed One Kassapa, accomplished and fully enlightened, had eaten and had withdrawn his hand from the bowl, King Kiki of Parsi took a low seat, sat down at one side, and said, "Venerable Sir, let the Blessed One accept from me a residence for the rains in Benares. That will be helpful for the Sangha." "Enough, King. My residence for the rains has already been provided for." This is a rule even today, that if people invite somebody for the rains retreat, if you have a previous invitation, you have to keep the previous invitation, even if you get an invitation from a king. Even these days, for example, that some of you may invite the monks for a house blessing in your place. So, you know, if I accept, you know, to go on a house blessing to your place, and then, you know, George Bush or the King of Thailand or anyone else later on invites, you know, the monks to go to their house, we have to say, "No, I'm sorry, we already have an invitation." So when we have invitations, it is literally first come, first served. And it doesn't matter who comes afterwards, I'm sorry, we can't accept it. So we don't look at accepting either rich people's invitation or sort of a powerful people's invitation. Everyone is looked upon and respected equally. A second and a third time, the King of Parsi said, "Venerable Sir, let the Blessed One accept from me a residence for the rains in Benares. That will be helpful for the Sangha." "Enough, King. My residence for the rains has already been provided for." The king thought, "The Blessed One Kassapa, accomplished and fully enlightened, does not accept from me a residence for the rains," and he was very disappointed and sad. Then he said, "Venerable Sir, have you a better supporter than I am?" "I have, great king. There is a market town called Webalinga, where a potter named Gatikara lives. He is my supporter, my chief supporter." Now, it's wonderful that this Gatikara is a poor fellow, but the Buddha would actually just be so happy being supported by this poor potter than a great king. "Now you, great king, thought, 'The Blessed One Kassapa, accomplished and fully enlightened, does not accept from me a residence for the rains in Benares,' and you were very disappointed and sad. But the potter Gatikara will not be so." They missed out here in the first translation. "The potter Gatikara is not and will not be so disappointed on account of his attainment. The potter Gatikara has gone for refuge to the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha. So he's gone for the three refuges. He abstains from killing living beings, from taking what is not given, from misconduct and sensual pleasures, from false speech, and from wine, liquor, and intoxicants, which are the basis of negligence. And what are those called? The five precepts, yes. He has perfect confidence in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha, and he possesses the virtues loved by noble ones. He is free from doubt about suffering, about the origin of suffering, about the cessation of suffering, and about the way leading to the cessation of suffering. Now, what does that mean? For those of you who know your suttas, a person who has perfect confidence in the Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha, and possesses the virtues loved by the noble ones, that is the stream winner. That's usually the way they talk about a stream winner. It's also emphasized, too, that he is free from doubt about suffering, about the origins of suffering, the cessation of suffering, and about the way leading to the cessation of suffering. Free from doubt about the Four Noble Truths. Which is one more way of describing the stream winner, the soul one. He eats only in one part of the day, just like the monks. In other words, he's keeping eight precepts. He observes celibacy, another of the eight precept rules. He is virtuous of good character. Now look at this one. He has laid aside gems and gold. He has given up gold and money. So even he, as a layperson, would not accept any gold, any money, any gems. He would live very simply. He does not dig the ground for clay using a pick with his own hand. What is left over from embankments or thrown up by rats, he brings home in a carrier. Why does he need the earth? To make his pots. And why doesn't he dig the ground? In case he might sort of kill a worm or a beetle living inside. When he has made a pot, this is how he does his business. When he has made a pot, he says, let anyone who likes set down some selected rice or selected beans or selected lentils and let him take away whatever he likes. Just simple barter, just for food supplies. He supports his blind and aged parents. Now, this is his next attainment. Having destroyed the five lower fetters, which is, okay, who knows the five lower fetters? Fetter number one? Three? No, that's number four. The lower three fetters are destroyed by the stream winner. It's actually the view of a self, the Sakkaya Ditti, the Siddhabhata Paramasa, the view that you can get enlightened just by rites and rituals or observances. Number three, skeptical doubt. The four is Karmachanda, which is the sensuality, the looking for joy in the realm of the five senses, and Vayapada, ill will. Those are the five lower fetters, which are destroyed when a person attains to be a non-returner, the Anagami, which is the third stage of enlightenment, very, very close to fully enlightened. So it says here, he is an anagami, a non-returner. This is Gatikara. And he is one who will reappear spontaneously in the pure abodes and there attain final nibbana without ever returning from that world, which is what non-returners do. That's why they're called non-returners. At their death, they go to the heaven of the pure abodes and there they will stay until they attain the full enlightenment, and they'll never return to this world from there. We'll see in a moment what it actually means, never return. It means never get reborn here. They can come for a visit, and we're going to soon see a visit of Gatikara. But that's coming later. So the Buddha here is saying that Gatikara is a non-returner. Now, let's see how he lives. What I like about this, it gives a description of what an anagami, a non-returner, is like. And especially they just keep all their precepts. They don't, not at all concerned with money. So even though that he's a lay person, he needs to support his parents, he will not accept any money, he just makes pots. Whoever wants to take a pot, take it. If you want to leave some food, leave some food. And that's as far as he would go. And that's someone who has no attachments, who's really let go of the world, so he doesn't have any money at all. And I'd love to say that, just to say, monks and nuns, anyone who's listened to this talk on the internet, and this is what an enlightened being is supposed to be doing. So even Gatikara, a lay person, would do this and not get involved in such things. So, you know, monks and nuns should not get involved in these things either. In fact, the only reason why he didn't become a monk himself, Gatikara, was because of his blind parents. And to show the Gatikara's unworldliness, the Buddha continues with the following anecdote, paragraph 19. On one occasion, when I was living at Webalinga, it being morning, I dressed and taking my bowl and outer robe, I went to the potter Gatikara's parents and asked them, "Where has the potter gone, please?" "Venerable sir, your supporter has gone out, but take rice from the cauldron and sauce from the saucepan and eat." I did so and went away. Then the potter Gatikara went to his parents and asked, "Who has taken rice from the cauldron and sauce from the saucepan and eaten and gone away?" The parents replied, "My dear, the blessed one Kassapa, accomplished and fully enlightened, did." Oh, then the potter Gatikara thought, "It is a gain for me, it is a great gain for me, that the Buddha, the blessed one Kassapa, accomplished and fully enlightened, relies on me thus." And rapture and happiness never left him for a half month, or his parents for a week. He realized that he'd actually given food to a Buddha. And the Buddha had actually just taken it. What a wonderful thing that was. He was just so happy. On another occasion, anecdote number 2. When I was living at Webalinga, it being morning, I dressed and taken my bowl and robe, I went to the potter Gatikara's parents and asked them, "Where has the potter gone, please?" "Venerable sir, your supporter has gone out, but take some porridge from the vessel and sauce from the saucepan and eat." I did so and went away. Then the potter Gatikara went to his parents and said, "Who has taken porridge from the vessel and sauce from the saucepan, eaten and gone away?" "My dear, the blessed one Kassapa, accomplished and fully enlightened, did." Then the potter Gatikara thought again, "It is a gain for me, it is a great gain for me. The blessed one Kassapa, accomplished and fully enlightened, relies on me thus." And rapture and happiness never left him for a half month, or his parents for a week, once more. On another occasion, I was living at Webalinga, my hut leaked. This is the Buddha. My hut leaked. Then I dressed the monks thus, "Go, monks, and find out if there is any grass at the potter Gatikara's house." "Venerable sir, there is no grass at the potter Gatikara's house. There is a grass thatch on his workshop." Now, if you read in the book here, it says on his roof. But actually, that was, I think, might have been actually changed in the second edition, because I was telling him that that's actually the workshop. In the potter's house, they would have the place where they lived, their private quarters, and they'd have like a lean-to, like a veranda. And that was actually the workshop, where the potter would make his pots, and he'd display them on a bench on those workshops. So it's actually on the workshop roof, if you like. "Venerable sir, there's no grass at the potter Gatikara's house. There is grass thatch on his workshop roof. Go, monks, and remove the grass from potter Gatikara's workshop." Because as it says there, when I first read this, the Buddha was saying, go and remove the grass from the potter Gatikara's house. My goodness, no person would do that and make, you know, the people and their blind parents have no roof over their heads. That's not what a Buddha would do. But it's the workshop. It's just on the outside. It's not absolutely necessary. So he actually said, go, monks, and remove the grass from the potter Gatikara's workshop roof. They did so. Then the potter Gatikara's parents asked the monks, because of course they couldn't see the monks, who is removing the grass from the house? Sister, the hut of the blessed one Kassapa, accomplished and fully enlightened, is leaking. Take it, venerable sirs, take it. And he got, and bless you. And it's, what it actually means, the actual Pali, it's a very beautiful word. It's, take it, venerable sirs, take it, Bhadra Mukha. And Bhadra Mukha literally means like beautiful faces. It was like a nice term of saying, you know, darlings or dears or something. So if ever you want to show how much you know Pali, you can always tell your partner and call them Bhadra Mukha, which means lucky face or fortunate face. So it was actually a term of like both endearment and respect, even though they couldn't see what those faces were like because they were blind. Take it, venerable sirs, take it, beautiful faces. Then the Pratigatikara went to his parents and asked, who has removed the grass from the workshop roof? The monks did, my dear. The hut of the Blessed One Kassapa, accomplished and fully enlightened, is leaking. Oh, and then the Pratigatikara thought, it is a gain for me. It is a great gain for me. For the Blessed One Kassapa, accomplished and fully enlightened, relies on me thus. And the rapture and happiness never left him for a half month, or his parents for a week. Then the entrance workshop remained 3 whole months with the sky for a roof, and yet no rain came in. Such is a Pratigatikara. And he's telling these anecdotes to the king about just how faithful this fellow is, and how he understands, you know, about looking after Sovabuddha. And that if the Buddha comes and just asks for something, he just feels so happy. It is a gain for the Pratigatikara, said the king. It is a great gain for him that the Blessed One Kassapa, accomplished and fully enlightened, relies upon him thus. And the king Kiki was not sad anymore when he realized the sort of person looking after the Buddha Kassapa. In fact, he was so impressed with Gatikara, this is what he did. Then King Kiki of Kasi dispatched to the Pratigatikara 500 cartloads of red rice stored in the sheaf, and also source materials to go with it. Then the king's men went to the Pratigatikara and told him, Venerable Sir, you're calling him Venerable Sir, notice Gatikara, that's usually the term regarded, talked about for a monk. But he was so close to being a monk, he was like a monk in his heart. That they called him, Venerable Sir, there are 500 cartloads of red rice stored in the sheaf, and also source materials to go with it, dispatched to you by the King Kiki of Kasi. Please accept them. The king is very busy and has much to do. And, the Gatikara replied, the king is very busy and has much to do. I have enough. Let this be for the king himself. This Gatikara is just irrepressible. All this stuff, he said, no, I don't need it. Give it to the king. Now imagine if this was like huge wealth for a very, very poor fella. The Gatikara, no, I'll be okay. Now, Ananda, we come to the last paragraph. You may think thus, certainly someone else was a Brahmin student, Jyotipala, on that occasion, but it should not be regarded thus. I was that Brahmin student, Jyotipala, on that occasion. That is what the Blessed One said. And the Venerable Ananda was satisfied and delighted in the Blessed One's words. Now, before we go on, I'm going to now read out, for those of you who've got the pieces of paper on the back there, you see another little sutta there called Gatikara. I'm just looking at what number is it, if you can just pick it up? 174, thank you. I think that's the verse number. Yes, here we go, good. It goes a bit further. It starts at 170. Okay, now, we start from the top here. This is verse form. Over the page is where it gets really interesting. If you haven't got this, it doesn't matter. I'll explain it as it goes along. It's very short. 7 monks reborn in Awiha have been fully liberated. With lust and hatred utterly destroyed, they have crossed over attachment to the world. And Awiha, this is the Devata, the god Gatikara. Reborn in Awiha is another word for the pure abodes. And who are those who crossed the swamp, the realm of death so hard to cross, who having left the human body have overcome even the heavenly bond? Upaka and Palaganda, Pukusati, these are 3, then Badia and Badadeva, Bahudanti and Pingya. These, having left the human body, have overcome the celestial bond. So he's actually telling him of not Awiha, is a place in India, sorry. But these, they were born there and they have actually overcome the bonds and are now arahats. Good is the word you speak of them, of those who have abandoned Mara's snares. Whose Dharma was it that they understood whereby they cut through the bondage of existence. Gatikara, it was not apart from the Blessed One. It was not apart from your teaching. By having understood your Dhamma, they cut through the bondage of existence. Now here we have one of those wonderful sayings. Where name and form ceases, stops without remainder. By understanding that Dhamma here, they cut through the bondage of existence. And when name and form ceases, that's the cessation of all, that's the mentality. That's the cessation of everything, when the mind stops. And the Blessed One said, deep is the speech you utter, hard to understand, very hard to grasp. Having understand whose Dhamma do you utter such speech? And now Gatikara, this is the interesting paragraph. In the past, this Deva says to our Buddha, in the past I was a potter Gatikara in Wehalinga instead of Webalinga. I supported my mother and father then as a lay follower of the Buddha Kassapa. I abstained from sexual intercourse. I was celibate, free from carnal ties. I was your fellow villager. In the past, I was your friend. I am the one who knows these seven liberated bhikkhus who, with lust and hatred utterly destroyed, have crossed over attachment to the world. Blessed One, just so it was at that time, as you say, O Bhagawa. In the past, you were the potter Gatikara in Wehalinga. You supported your mother and father then as a lay follower of the Buddha Kassapa. You abstained from sexual intercourse. You were celibate, free from carnal ties. You were my fellow villager. In the past, you were my friend. Such was the meeting that took place between those friends from the past, both now inwardly developed, bearers of their final bodies. So this was like a reunion. Gatikara had, at the end of his life under Kassapa the Buddha, had got reborn in the pure abodes as a non-returner, and was still there to witness the full enlightenment of his friend Jyotipala, now born in the Sakyan clan as Siddhartha Gautama, saw him become enlightened and came down to congratulate him. Now, obviously, what that means is many things. If we take these suttas as valid, authentic, and there's no reason to doubt them, these are, you know, the early suttas of the Buddha, and I believe that in the Chinese versions as well, what that means is this Gatikara was saying that this is a previous life of our Buddha Gautama. And in the scheme of things that Kassapa is always said to have been not that long ago in cosmic terms. It's supposed to be in this eon even. So when people describe the development of that person who's going to be a Buddha, and they say the spiritual development is over many, many eons, in the career, if you like, of a future Buddha, this is very close to the very end. So we see that Jyotipala, a Buddha-to-be, shortly, was so stupid he couldn't even recognize the Buddha at first. That's point number one. So those people who think that bodhisattvas, beings about to become a Buddha, are very wise, very spiritually attained, and have wonderful powers. Here you have a story of a Buddha-to-be, very close to the fulfillment of his career, who certainly did not have any of those wonderful powers which people expect of the Mahayana idea of a bodhisattva. This was a Buddha-to-be. Number two, you can see that even though that is about to be a Buddha, he's never called a bodhisattva. In the Pali Canon, the word bodhisattva is only applied from the time the Buddha leaves the Tusita realm, or the Buddha-to-be leaves the Tusita realm, and to the time just before his enlightenment in his last birth. Basically, it's only that part of his last birth before his enlightenment. That's the only time in the early texts they use the word bodhisattva. Before then, like you just heard here, never called a bodhisattva. Number three. In the story of the Buddha's enlightenment, sitting under the Bodhi tree, experiencing the four jhanas, this is standard in all the descriptions of the Buddha's enlightenment, After emerging from the enlightenment, from the jhanas, the first thing he recalled, if this is before his enlightenment, was his previous existences. This is before he was enlightened. Recalling his previous existences, you would think, I think it's a very reasonable assumption, with high probability, that when recalling his previous existence, his existences, one that would stand out was the one as a bhikkhu, as a monk, under Kassapa the Buddha, as described in the Gatikara Sutta. And as a monk, under Kassapa the Buddha, you think that certainly that he would have heard the teachings of the Buddha, such as those Four Noble Truths, which it says that Kassapa's disciple Gatikara had no doubt about. And surely, if you remembered a previous life under a Buddha, you'd also remember the sorts of things those Buddha would have taught you. It seems to be obvious. In fact, to deny it seems to be very implausible. It seems to be obvious that Jyotipala would have heard the teaching on the Four Noble Truths and many other deep teachings as a bhikkhu disciple of the Buddha Kassapa, and would have recalled those under the Bodhi tree just before his enlightenment. So, Gautama the Buddha would have received teachings. Teachings which he remembered from a distant past, from a previous life, under another Buddha. So was the Buddha, as it were, independently enlightened? Or did he get those teachings through the past life memories, after attaining the jhanas under the Bodhi tree, just before his enlightenment? And lastly, if you do have such spiritual qualities, you're soon to become a Buddha. And you become a bhikkhu under a Buddha. You'd expect that Jyotipala, once he ordained, would at least have some attainment by studying under a Buddha. Maybe, as some people say, Jyotipala did have some attainments. Obviously not a non-return or arahat, otherwise he couldn't come back again. But certainly you'd have thought, with such strong spiritual potential and training as a monk under a Buddha, surely he would have become a stream winner, a soul one, or a once returner. Gatikara, it wasn't that long, because Gatikara was still living in the pure abodes, so he could actually come down and congratulate the Buddha. So the time between their lives wasn't that long. So maybe it was the previous life of the Buddha. The previous life. And it makes a lot of sense. It's a plausible hypothesis, with high probability, that Jyotipala, being a monk under Kassapa, would at least become a stream winner. Maybe a once returner. And as a once returner, as it says elsewhere, once returners, for the most part, are born in the Tusita realm. That's the realm which most Sakadagamas, once returners, get born into. And of course, if the Buddha was a once returner, if Jyotipala, the Brahmin, was a once returner, if he got reborn in the Tusita realm, having a once returner, then we know that the Buddha was reborn. Our Buddha came from the Tusita realm. And when he was born at Lumbini, he took 7 steps. And what did he say at the end of those 7 steps? This is my last birth. I am the chief of the foremost. This is my last birth. How could that little being say this is my last birth, unless it was his last birth, because he was a once returner? That was believed by the Sarvastivadins. It was a point of controversy in the time of the Emperor Asoka. The Theravada senior monks at the time said no, he couldn't have been. But maybe he was. What do you think? That is a Gatikara Sutta, which has a huge amount of information straight from the source here about the history of the Buddha Gautama and where he came from. Make up your own minds. Yes, questions? Yeah, what I meant by his last birth, his last human birth. So from the human realm, when Jyotipada died, be reborn in the Tusita realm, and then from the Tusita realm, back down to earth. We do have a connection there because it's well known, it's in the Achara Abhuta Sutta, marvellous and wonderful. Let's, for those of you who got it, let's look it up. It shows actually that the Buddha was came from the Tusita realm. Achara Abhuta Sutta, now where is that one? Sorry? 123. If you look up page 123. Okay. This is on page 982. Okay. There is that. Paragraph 7. Oh, paragraph 6 and 7. Okay, yeah. Okay, this is number 3, first of all. I heard and learned this Venerable Sir from the Blessed One's own lips. Mindful and fully aware, Ananda, the Bodhisattva, this is the first time I say Bodhisattva, appeared in the Tusita heaven. That mindful and fully aware, the Bodhisattva appeared in the Tusita heaven. This I remember is a wonderful, marvelous quality of the Blessed One. I heard and learned this from the Blessed One's own lips. Mindful and fully aware, Bodhisattva remained in the Tusita heaven. For the whole of his lifespan, the Bodhisattva remained in the Tusita heaven. Mindful and fully aware, the Bodhisattva passed away from the Tusita heaven and descended into his mother's room. Okay, so this is saying that the Buddha actually lived before in the Tusita heaven. So we can actually trace the Buddha's history. Born in Lumbini, was in the Tusita heaven beforehand. We don't know actually for sure what happened before, but we know not that long before he was a monk under Jyotipala. So it was either there was another birth in between the birth where he was a monk under Kassapa and ascending the Tusita heaven. But that's such a short period of time in cosmic time that it's more than likely that there was no other birth. But from staying as a monk under Kassapa the Buddha, when he died, took rebirth in the Tusita realm, and from the Tusita realm back to this human life. That's very interesting about predictions. Most times, the Buddhas don't predict very much at all, because they know the future is very uncertain. So, there was no knowledge of, or no record of Kassapa the Buddha predicting this would be a future Buddha. Yes, yeah. Indeed, yes. Not the last 40,000 years, but actually, this is a bit much, but according to the way these things are worked out, there's a sutta in the Anguttara Nikaya where we can work these things out. The length, he says, the whole of lifespan, the Bodhisattva remained in the Tusita heaven. And according to the Anguttara section there, the lifespan of a Tusita god is 576 million human years. That's Anguttara 8, number 42. This is a long time. Maybe that's a bit sort of too long. But maybe a few tens of thousands of years. Sometimes for those of you who think, well, how could there have been sort of like civilization such a long time ago? Every so often, whenever you go on these pilgrimages, the last time I went on the pilgrimage in the museum in New Delhi, as well as looking at the Buddha relics there, there was also a huge exhibition there of of artifacts from the ancient Indus civilization of Mohenjo-daro and, what's the other place? Mohenjo-daro is the main one, and it's another sort of town. Two very ancient towns, which no one knows much about them, but they're almost like pre-Babylon. And they had there were huge cities with irrigation channels, they had toilet channels, wastewater systems taking water out of the city, huge city with Harappa was the other one, Harappa and Mohenjo-daro, with a grid-like city system, like streets at right angles to each other. And usually that meant a huge amount of organization, and such well-organized cities usually are not at the beginning of a civilization, but actually happen when a civilization matures. So when I first saw those plans and those artifacts, I just realized, I thought anyway, this is a very ancient civilization. And as I was looking at it in the museum, this guy came up to me, and I don't know why he said this, but he said, "Are you an archaeologist?" I said, "No, I'm a monk, a Buddhist monk." And they said, "But, you know, I'm really interested. These artifacts here and the whole evidence of this Indus civilization, you know, is much older than the so-called cradle of civilization in Mesopotamia." And the fellow's face lit up. And he said, "Yes, yes, yes." And he was actually Professor Sharma. He was actually the head professor who was doing all the archaeological work on these sites and had his office sort of in the National Museum. He said, "Come to my office for a cup of tea." I had all the other people I had to look after. I can't, I'm very busy, but thank you. And that sometimes our Western civilization is so Euro or Middle East centric. You know, sometimes, and I'm saying this as a European, sometimes we have the conceit that democracy started in Greece, where it was at exactly the same time well established in India. And the Buddhist Sangha, you know, the rules of monks and nuns, are a democratic model which was taken from 2,500 years ago, almost frozen in time because we can't change those rules or those procedures. And it shows a democratic model which was in existence, fully developed 25 centuries ago, at the time of Athenian democracy. And I've mentioned to many people that the longest continuous surviving democratic institution is the Buddhist monks and nuns. You've kept that democracy alive 25 centuries. The same procedures. So we don't have like a king of a sangha. And as you know, that there's no big leader. That we all meet together in our monasteries and we decide things democratically. And even though I'm supposed to be the boss, I get outvoted. And it's also that civilization where it started. There was these huge civilizations, Mohenjo-daro and Harappa. And we don't know exactly too much about them, except they were ancient and they were well developed. And maybe that was where Kasapa was. Yeah, something like that. I don't know, 10 or 15,000 BC or whatever. Was not as long. Yeah, was not as long. Yeah, that's pretty long. Yeah, it is still being. Indeed, some of those lifespans, some of the times and the numbers, sometimes are very hard to pin down, because numbers and time in those days, they said 1,000 just meant a many. No, how much money has Bill Gates got? Millions and millions and millions. But, you know, we're unspecific. We just say millions and millions, or billions and trillions and zillions. So it just means a lot, rather than being specific. Maybe. But anyway, there we have a story about a monk in the time of Gatikara, who's supposed to be our Buddha, and that's reinforced in that little sutta from the Sanghita Nikaya, the Gatikara Sanghita. Yeah. Yeah. It means just then. servant, and tatasamaya. Oh, no. It's just to say, at that time, at that occasion. That's just the way that in the Pali, sometimes you have to be careful here, and it's a good question. If you don't know your Pali, that sometimes, when it's translated, sometimes that there are sort of implications which only exist in the translated terms. You go back to original Pali, there's no implication there at all. So it just means then. Now there are a couple of questions. I forgot to do this. You're supposed to have the microphone. This is recorded. Yes.
I don't know. I've read this before that the Dipangaya Buddha.
Yes.
That time that that Buddha Dipangaya predicted Sumedha.
That's right. Yes. This is.
And then he predicted that he's going to be a Buddha in I don't know when, but that's what the prediction.
That's right. Yes.
According to that book. After Sumedha, he went to Tusita, heaven. He was not happy over there because he all this music and dancing. And then he wanted to be reborn in that that Prince Siddhartha.
That's right. Yes. This is the other story, which is not anywhere to be recorded in the suttas. I think that might come in the Appadana, which again is appended to the Abhidharma, much later than the suttas. Where they say that there was a monk called, or a man called Sumedha, who met Dipankara Buddha, and that was a long, many, many Buddhas ago. And so they've decided he wanted to become a Buddha in another future age. And the Buddha Dipankara said, yes, in a future time you will be a Buddha. However, that is post-canonical. It's not said by the Buddha. It's not in the early suttas. So you find when you investigate Buddhism, you have the very earliest teachings of the Buddha. And you've got much has been added to afterwards. And one of the nice things about this sutta, it actually makes it very clear what was early and what has been added. So that particular story of Dipankara, that is almost certainly been added. That was not original. And the same, like for those of you who have grown up in traditional Buddhist countries, like in Thailand, or I think this is also in Sri Lanka and Burma, we have the Vaisantara. The Prince Vaisantara is supposed to be the last birth of a Buddha. And so much so that Vaisantara Jataka is so popular that it's like almost like a play, you know, Prince Vaisandorn in Thai, which, I forget what time of the year, I think it's in February, that even the monks, you know, are supposed to recite this little play of Vaisandorn, Prince Vaisandorn. It was very, very popular in Thailand. But even that seems to be coming a long time after the Buddha. Vaisantara, or Prince Vaisandorn. So here we're actually seeing what's original, what's been added on later on. There are a couple of questions here, which somebody's actually written out. So here we go. Okay, I'll do these other ones first of all, because that one's not on the sutta itself. In listening to sutta, we hear, rightly fully enlightened one, for the Buddha. What does it mean about getting enlightened? Is there any difference between when comparing to arahats, or getting fully enlightened? Again, the Buddha is the first of the arahats of our age, having extra special powers. In other words, all the Buddhas, you know, they have the psychic powers of remembering their past lives and reading minds and all that sorts of things. But some arahats have the psychic powers, some don't. But as far as their wisdom and understanding is concerned, they say they have the same depth of wisdom. Maybe the Buddha's is wider, but the same depth. So I know that some people would say that the difference is the Buddha became enlightened by himself without a teacher. They say sometimes that's a difference, but the Gatikara Sutta here questions that definition of a Buddha. Because here it does seem to be the Buddha, he remembered his past lives. And an early one, and not so a recent one, was under Kassapa. He would have remembered that. He remembered the teachings, so it wasn't really just done by himself. In the Gatikara Sutta, we see that Kassapa Buddha and Gautama Buddha were born in India, and they lived in the same place. Are all Buddhas born in the same area of India? Is there any explanation? According to some places, they say all Buddhas have to be born in India and they all have to be male. However, does that really make sense? Now, a lot of times people really sort of argue, does a Buddha have to be male? Because feminists rightly argue, well, that's not fair. And I've gone on record as saying in conferences, look, if a Buddha was born in a matriarchal society, in other words, where the women are the higher of the two genders, or even if it was an equitable gender society, then there'd be no reason why the Buddha would not be reborn as a woman. The point being here that the only reason why the Buddha-to-be would actually choose that particular gender would be for the purpose of making the teaching easier, to have the authority given to him and not the problems of being in a lower caste or a lower gender. So the Buddha would choose like a caste, like the Kshatriya class. You know, he would actually get into a reasonably good family, because that would make it easier to actually pursue his teaching career and give him more authority. So that's the only reason. So in a matriarchal society, yes, they would. So we always talk about that, but being born in India doesn't really make sense to me, that it's always born in India. Whichever, you know, is the most useful country to be reborn into would be reborn there. So not necessarily India. Okay. And here we go here. This is not on the sutta, but nevertheless, I have heard that some people get enlightened by listening to the Dhamma. Does that mean that it is a deep understanding of existence and realization of nothingness? If when such a one dies, they go through all the jhanas and go to nothingness, can you explain about it? And if not, Papancha, some arahats thought they want to be reborn again in Brahmaloka. Not Bhavadana, because I know the one who become enlightened does not want to be reborn. For any reason, can he get reborn in Brahmaloka? Okay, first of all, an arahat, there's no way that they can get reborn again. The will to be reborn has been completely destroyed. The seed has gone. No way can an enlightened being get reborn again for any reason. It's just too late to stop. When people get enlightened by listening to the Dhamma, remember that the listening to the Dhamma is not the cause of enlightenment. It's just the straw, as they say, which breaks the camel's back. It's just the last little piece of the jigsaw puzzle. Because they have, the only way to become enlightened is through the Eightfold Path. In other words, it's not just listening to the Dhamma, it's actually having the correct view, the right thought, the right speech, the right action, the right livelihood, the right effort, the right mindfulness, the right stillness, which is the jhanas. You need all of those to become enlightened. Sometimes in the suttas we have what's called snapshots of the last moment of enlightenment. Whenever you take a snapshot of a person here, what's the left and the right is out of the picture. It's there in real life, but the picture only shows that little frame. And so very often in the suttas you read the last little piece of the jigsaw puzzle, which actually just pushed a person into enlightenment. And it doesn't actually mention all the other things which came beforehand, which are absolutely necessary. And of course we have great arguments these days, especially about jhanas. And sometimes people actually write and say, look, it says here someone got enlightened and there's no mention of achieving jhanas in their enlightenment. And our standard argument is that actually it's true, there's no mention in there that they kept any precepts. There's no mention in there, like Bahaya, that he didn't go to a brothel, he didn't sleep with other people's wives, slaughter people, drink alcohol and take drugs. It's not mentioned in there. But of course, anyone who would think anyone could do those sorts of things and get enlightened, you know, it's ridiculous. The only reason they didn't put those things in there was assumed that was, you know, normal. That's a normal practice. This was the last little piece. Having done all of that, keeping your precepts, meditating, sort of getting some good understanding of the Dhamma, then this is the last little thing which pulls them over into enlightenment. Does that make sense? Okay, better.
He did it very close to the Buddha to be in this life, that life. Why he has to be convinced so hardly by this Gatikara to go to see the Buddha Kassapa?
Exactly.
And he was quite rude in the beginning. Why he has to be like that? It's so close to this.
That's exactly, yes. Why? It was Jyotipala. He was soon to be a Buddha. Why did he just say such rude things to a Kassapa the Buddha? And why didn't he just go straight away to see him? And it just actually shows you just that even a person like that could become a Buddha soon. Now the positive side of that is each one of you, you might think, oh, I was such a long way away from becoming enlightened. Maybe you're not so far away as you think. Because there was a person who wouldn't even go to see a Buddha and said bad things about him, who soon, very soon, became Siddhartha Gautama, our Buddha. Could have been, yeah. Just wait, let's not call it 2,000 years, just two lifetimes ago. Not that long. So what that actually does, it actually just completely undermines the Mahayana idea of a bodhisattva path. When you look at the Gatikara Sutta, the Mahayana idea of a bodhisattva makes no more sense. Because there is, you know, what they would call a bodhisattva, close to the culmination of his long, many lifetimes career. And he wasn't wise. And even his speech left much to be desired. Yet he could still become a Buddha. I'm glad you noticed that. That's an important part of the sutta. If you're going to, come on, you've got to exercise you. The reason we're doing this is because that this talk gets recorded and put on the internet. Sorry, Bo, for not doing it earlier.
Just this one last question. You just now mentioned that the Buddha was a once returner, and as a result, when he last descended to the earth, he proclaimed that that was his last birth. I just wonder if that happens to all once returner, or just because he's a Sammasam Buddha to be?
Okay, you're asking, is that just happen to all once returners? We don't really know that, but certainly that having been under the Buddha Kassapa, he would have probably had a huge amount of psychic powers or deep meditation. You know, once he became a monk, you know, it's, you can imagine just becoming a monk under, say, Najan Chah or Najan Man or some of these other great teachers. But I mean, this is under a Buddha. I mean, that's huge. That's under the best professor of the whole universe, the best teacher. So you can imagine he must have got something very high. So I'd imagine that sort of the way that it happens is, you know, you do get born mindful, you do live in that realm totally mindfully, and you get descend from that realm into the human realm mindfully, and you get born mindfully. So, as he was born, because of the power of meditation from the previous life, he would have been able to speak. As I've mentioned in other talks about three other cases of babies speaking when they were born. That's, you know, another talk which I've given, which is very strange and weird. A child coming out of your womb in the first days of life speaks. And that's actually what's said in the in some of the suttas there, that some beings, they are mindful within the womb. They exit from the womb mindfully. And which I think that just the first few days they're mindful. But then their body takes over and they become baby again. They basically forget. So that's maybe the Siddhartha Gautama could recall and could speak when he was first born and say, this is my last life. I thought that was a myth when I was a young Buddhist. So no way can babies speak. But then later on when I heard cases, you know, from people who weren't lying, that made me think, maybe this is true. Maybe Siddhartha Gautama did speak. And maybe he did say that. Because he was a once returner. He knew this was his last birth.
this one more chance to ask?
Yes, please. Have the last question, but I never believe that anyway.
There was talking about the sutra of his birth. There was this mention of the light that could be seen by all. I just wonder if we could interpret that literally, because I did not seem to see record of that light in Chinese tradition or in Egyptian tradition.
Indeed, yes. That seems to be standard. There's something which we call hagiography, which we always have to be very careful of. Hagiography is when there's a very impressive spiritual being, and even during their life, there are many myths accumulate around them. Myths of psychic powers, myths of amazing feats, myths of supernatural activity, which is mostly wishful thinking. Basically, that a saint, because you believe in them so much, because you want them to be special, whatever they do becomes interpreted as being supernatural. And so when those sorts of things happen, you get the reputation of the saints becomes far greater than actually what is valid. And that's called hagiography. And many professors, academics, have got into that. And I remember there was one case I read about of a person in India, who was a very, very wise and wonderful being. And even in his lifetime, there's many myths were actually composed around him, which he vehemently denied. They never happened. However, even though he completely denied them, still they became part of his authorized biography. For those of you who saw that movie, The Life of Brian, you may remember just actually how such things happen. When they started chasing him around and saying, "You're the Messiah, you're the Messiah." And he says, "I'm not the Messiah." And then someone says, "Yes, it actually says in the scriptures that he will deny he's the Messiah." And so he changes, like, "Okay, I am the Messiah then." And they go, "He is the Messiah." So no matter what you say, if people want to take to be the Messiah, then you are the Messiah. And that's called hagiography.
The poem is disappeared in the canon itself, right? In the same sutra, that there was this light that could be seen in the world.
There is, yes. There is said there's many times of that light happened. Whether that was actually light seen in the world or light seen in just the Deva realms, I'm not sure. Maybe some people saw it, some people didn't see it. Maybe it was a supernova, I don't know.
There was a record of a supernova.
Yeah, but I don't know if it was at that time. So that one's just, I don't know. Are there any other more questions which people would like to ask about the sutta? Okay, that's whoever asked that sutta, thank you for asking for it. And again, just to sum it, I think you all know what it means here. It's a story told by the Buddha of one of his previous lives. And it's an interesting life because when he was under a Buddha. And that actually changes much of our understanding of what enlightenment truly is, or what a Buddha is. It's controversial. And of course, you don't want to come here and learn what you already know. It's much better to see things in a different way. And that's called knowledge and learning. So thank you for coming. We'll now pay respects to the Buddha Dhamma Sangha.